will promptly and massively reciprocate any Israeli military action against its interests in the region. All the hypersonic missiles fired by Iran have hit their targets after evading Israel's air defense systems. And the Israeli ethnic cleansing in Gaza has claimed close to 34,000 Palestinian lives, 75% of them women and children. And welcome live from Tehran. You've tuned to World News. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Tehran has warned that the Islamic Republic will respond immediately and massively to any military action by the Zionist regime against its interests in the region. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian, speaking to his German counterpart, criticized Berlin for condemning Iran's punitive action against the Israeli regime. He called on the German government to concentrate on stopping the genocide in Gaza and restoring peace and stability to the region instead of condemning Iran's legitimate actions. Amir Abdullahian added that Iran precisely targeted the air base that Israel used to attack the Iranian consular section in Damascus. In another conversation with his Russian counterpart, Amir Abdullahian stated that Iran's reprisal operation was aimed at deterring, punishing, and warning the Zionist regime. He also praised Russia's positive attempts to create peace in the region. For his part, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said that Moscow believes that Iran's military action against Israel was based on a legitimate and restrained response. Well, Iran's recent response to the Israeli attack on its Syrian embassy was the Islamic Republic's first direct targeting of the Israeli-occupied territories using advanced hypersonic missiles. In our news review program, we have discussed the impacts of such an unprecedented strike, exploring how it might compel Israel to reassess its aggressive stance, especially with regards to Gaza.
It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. All hypersonic missiles fired by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps have hit their designated targets in Israel, marking the first time that Iran employs such weapons against real targets. The Israeli regime and its supporters failed to intercept any of the hypersonic missiles fired by Iran. These missiles were fired alongside drones, other ballistic and cruise missiles during the retaliatory operation against Israel. Iran is one of the few countries that possesses the technology to produce hypersonic missiles. These missiles can travel at stunning speeds and hit their targets with great precision. Iran's hypersonic missiles are highly maneuverable, enabling them to have an unpredictable flight path in order to confuse enemies' missile shields. The IRGC says tracking Iran's hypersonic missiles is impossible. Saad Nimr is a professor of political science at BrZ University who joins us from occupied Ramallah. We have Hakimet Sakhayabiria, who's an academic and political analyst, joining us from Tehran. Welcome to you both. Saad Nimr, let me first start with you. We're looking at the technical aspect of Iran's military capacity, where the hypersonic missiles is one of them. But let's look at the bigger picture as to the impact that this has had, the first time from Iranian territory that the Israel regime was targeted, and maybe the first time that the Israel regime has felt an onslaught of this scale. In terms of the impact that's going to have on the plight of Palestinians in particular, do you think that this may force the regime to recalculate the way that it approaches the issue of Palestine, given the genocidal aggression that it's exercising right now?
Yeah, if we are talking on the strategical point or issue, it will be a little bit long time, but definitely it's helping a lot in the overall problem in Palestine. It's now it's sitting, Iran is sitting now a new formula for the engagement with the Zionist movement and the Zionist regime. For the Palestinians, definitely that was a very good, and they were very happy with what happened the day before yesterday. But at the same time, as we say, the impact or the effect of this strike, it will come gradually and later on rather than sooner. Sooner, it was a hit for a target which was picked carefully by the Iranian leadership, and it was hit and the decoy of lots of drones and other missiles. It was just, you know, to confuse the enemy while the other missiles are hitting the base. Now, that was a great successful from our point of view. Now, how that will affect the Palestinians in the long run? First of all, we know that the Israelis knew now or know that they are not going to target Iran in any moment, and that might escalate the whole situation into a regional war that they could not tolerate can deal with it. The Americans, on the other hand, who are now convincing and pressurizing Israel not to retaliate, are going to pressurize them to finish the deal, to hand over the Palestinian prisoners for the Israeli prisoners who are captive by the Palestinian resistance.
Well, Ms. Hakimeh, if we want to take a look at the whole scenario here, this is something that is considered to be a very measured response from the Iranian side, and many don't look at it or understand that was the case, because on one hand you have Iran that actually forewarned from days ago that it was going to conduct a retaliatory attack, and it went ahead and did that anyways. And it did that with a combination of different types of items that it has in its military weaponry arsenal, which included these hypersonic missiles, which hit their targets. And that's another aspect of this, that it sent the message where it can hit targets with pinpoint accuracy. Mm-hmm. How does that change the equation militarily in the region against the Israeli regime and for Iran, and the message is sent to the regional countries at the same time?
Yes, it is one thing for military analysts and generals to talk about the idea that Iran has reached overmatch, something that was talked about in a New Yorker article by General McKenzie, CENTCOM leader, previous CENTCOM leader, United States official, that he said that Iran has reached the capability, a sort of capability that it is very difficult for the United States or any other power to basically control it militarily, let alone to defeat it militarily. But that it is one thing to talk about it, and it is another thing to see it happen and actually be realized. So this is what we are witnessing, that we are seeing the very complex military power that Iran has been able to build over the years, and beside that, we are witnessing the military the strategic military thinking of the IRGC that was able to carry out this complex operation and get through with it successfully. So it is very important. A very important thing that we are witnessing right now. It is going to change the calculations of the players on the ground, of course, including the United States and Israeli regime. I hope that this is going to be something that is going to work towards bringing about more stability to the region. Before what happened 2 nights ago, the Israeli regime looked at the Palestinian people and, of course, any other target that it had in its mind as defenseless populations. In the case of the Palestinian people, the Israeli regime looks at it as a defenseless indigenous population that has to be either controlled or eliminated in order for the Israeli settler colonialist machine to work and move forward. But now I think they have to look at things differently, and they have to see the reality on the ground, which is that not only aren't these people defenseless in terms of world public opinion, you know, that because of the, you know, the very awakening that we are seeing in terms of the public opinion being on the side of the Palestinian people, being against the genocidal actions of the Israeli regime, but also we are witnessing that there is, you know, a real power on the ground that is going to take action whenever it is necessary, with, you know, with precision, and is ready to carry out even more stronger action if the Israeli regime, you know, makes a wrong decision in retaliation.
All right, thank you very much. Let me thank our guest there from Ramallah, Saad Nimr, Professor of Political Science at Brzezet University, and Hakimia Sari Iberia, Academic and Political Analyst. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this news review.
Tehran says, stage by stage, Iran will give stronger responses in order to deter and punish any aggressor who might cross its red lines.
Iran does not seek escalation of tension in the region. Iran stresses again that it is committed to the goals and aspirations as per the United Nations Charter and international law regarding passing the red lines of Iran. In any stage, Iran will stand stronger than the previous stage in order to create deterrence and to punish the aggressor or the violator or any illogical and illegal move. Iran will take action. So I should highlight again that Iran's action was necessary and proportionate, and it hit military targets.
Khamenei said Iran's action was completely legitimate and in accordance with the United Nations Charter. He said the operation was carried out after diplomatic ultimatums were ignored by Israel's allies. He added that Western countries should appreciate Iran for its responsible behavior and restraint towards Israel. Now, the spokesman also said the inaction of the UN Security Council and irresponsible behavior of the U.S., U.K., and France forced Iran to take action to defend its security and national interests. More death and destruction have been reported as the Israeli regime continues to pound the Gaza Strip with airstrikes and artillery. In the latest massacre, Israeli warplanes hit the Al-Nusrat refugee camp in central Gaza, leaving several people dead. Also, the granddaughter of the Hamas resistance movement leader has succumbed to her injuries. Last week, regime's warplanes hit a vehicle carrying the Hamas chief's sons and grandchildren in the Al-Shati refugee camp in northern Gaza. Three of his sons and four of his grandchildren were among those killed. According to Gaza's health ministry, 68 Palestinians have been killed in Israeli strikes in a matter of 24 hours since the start of the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza. Nearly 34,000 Palestinians have been killed, 75% of them women and children. The casualty figures are likely to be much higher, with thousands still being buried under the debris. At least one more Palestinian has been killed as the Israeli occupying forces launch another deadly incursion into the northern West Bank city of Nablus. Regime's raids in the West Bank have intensified since the genocidal war in the Gaza Strip began. For more details, we were joined earlier by our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Candide.
Clashes taking place between resistance groups and the Israeli forces, and at the end of the day, unfortunately, the Israeli forces succeeded to detain a Palestinian. They claim that he's a wanted Palestinian from the presidential building. During the military raid, of course, the Israeli soldiers opened fire at Palestinians. There we are speaking about a military raid to an overcrowded area in the daytime, and the Israelis opened fire at Palestinians. They wounded two Palestinians. We are receiving now that one of those Palestinians was shot and killed, 17-year-old Palestinian Omar, Palestinian 17-year-old Yazan Mohammed Ishtayi from the village of Salem, and he is a high school student studying in Nablus, was shot and killed. This means that the number of Palestinians who had been killed by the Israeli forces today rises to 466. In addition to this military operation, the Israeli military claimed that a girl arrived at the military checkpoint of Deir Sharaf, West Nablus, and it's at the entrance to the village of Deir Sharaf. They claimed that she had a knife and she tried to stab Israeli soldiers. They opened fire at her and arrested her.
Well, tensions have been flaring between Israel and Hezbollah across Lebanon's southern border since the beginning of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza. And in the latest development, the resistance group detonated explosive devices targeting Israeli soldiers who were trying to cross into Lebanese territory. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh brings us the details.
Well, the most significant development is the incident that occurred near the border. Of course, the Israelis had been pondering on this event for long hours, actually. They were saying that there was an unknown explosion that took place and blew up right on the border with Lebanon, and that an elite force of the Golani group was targeted. They did not know, of course, any details, and they were surprised, and there were even some speculations that it could have been one of the cluster bombs that were thrown usually by the Israelis. However, they do have the maps and they do know where they have planted their own bombs. So then it was the statement of Hezbollah's resistance that actually clarified the situation. And this proves to us that Hezbollah has been very meticulous when it comes to observing the border, clearly verifying any sort of movement, making sure that they know all the whereabouts of the Israelis. We do know also from sources that the resistance has been not only monitoring that point, that specific spot in all the border. We know that there are fighters that are observing the entire border. Now, that place specifically, Hezbollah said that they had been observing and knew from previous times that these groups have been planning and attempting to infiltrate the border, going back and forth to that area. And so with that speculation in mind from Hezbollah's resistance, they planted bombs in that area.
Meanwhile, Syrians in the capital Damascus celebrate Iran's retaliatory Operation True Promise against the Israeli regime.
This response is a legitimate right according to the international law for the great country of Iran, and it is natural to respond to the aggression that targeted the Iranian consulate on Syrian soil. We support this retaliation because it is for an attack on us and on our friend Iran. Syria and Iran are the biggest resistance countries, and this is only part of the retaliation.
We did not sleep all night out of joy at the Iranian response to the Zionist occupation. This response is revenge for the souls of the martyrs who died in Syria, Palestine, and all the countries of the region. This is a legitimate right for Iran, as it is an aggression on Iranian soil. Therefore, we support Iran and the Islamic resistance in Lebanon, Iraq, and everywhere against the occupation.
Israel, our sworn enemy, occupying our homeland, and we have the right to fight. We have the right to defend our land. The recent attack on the Iranian consulate was on in Syria, but it's on Iranian territory. So Iran have the right to fight and respond in the appropriate time and place. Iran retaliated on behalf of the existence of defense.
And with that brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Dear listeners, this is the second part of A Window to Palestine. A Window to Palestine.
Ya estamos de regreso para seguir las conversaciones que hemos tenido.
We are now back to continue the conversation we had to learn about the Palestinian diaspora in Chile. Today I invite you to talk with Valentina Salvador Huagui, a Chilean doctor of Palestinian origin, who has been working recently since the beginning of the genocide in Gaza with a group of doctors to try to help. Let's learn a little bit more about Valentina through the following video.
Un poco más sobre Valentina.
Valentina Salvador es nieta de palestinos.
Valentina Salvador is the granddaughter of Palestinians. She studied medicine and is a specialist in surgeries for oncological diseases. She learned the love of cooking from her grandmother and grew up with recipes that she still continues to prepare and that connect her with the cultural traditions of her homeland. In 2017, she traveled to Palestine as part of a program that brought together the diaspora from different continents. She returned with the memory of a kind, happy and welcoming people who enjoyed life with simplicity despite the tensions of the occupation, the wall, and the many shortcomings. As part of the Doctors' Society of Palestine, where some 300 specialists participate, they began to pressure scientific societies to play a more active role and denounce the genocide. The events, however, have led them to continue their work raising funds to send medical supplies through the Chilean embassy in Egypt. Valentina believes that not only is the lack of food and water serious, the treatments that were left unfinished, the lack of vaccines and the lack of medical care in short are also other slow and silent ways of exterminating the Palestinian nation.
De exterminar al pueblo palestino.
Hola Valentina, muchas gracias por haber aceptado esta invitación.
Hello Valentina, thank you very much for accepting our invitation. You are third generation. On what date and for what reasons do your parents migrated here?
Acerca de la llegada de tus padres.
I'm sorry, your grandparents.
De mis abuelos, sí. Daniel, muchas gracias por la invitación. Un honor.
Well, of course, my grandparents. Daniel, thank you very much for the invitation. It is an honor to be here representing the Doctors of Palestine. Look, my family on both sides come more or less before the Nakba. It was mainly as a result of the persecutions by the Ottoman Empire. For example, my family name is Salvador. My grandfather arrived in Chile around 1910. Several of his children were born in Betlalal, but my grandfather was born here in Chile, in the town of Catamu, where they settled upon their arrival in Chile. On the other hand, in depth, my grandfather's wife, Victoria Issa, came to Chile directly from Palestine. Around 1929-1930, my grandfather's father arrived here with them, and from there, in the bottom line, the family has settled in this land.
Aquí hay dos eventos que es importante destacar.
Here there are two events that are important to highlight. It was around the First World War that the Palestinians arrived. Turkish Ottoman Empire decided for the first time to force the inhabitants to defend the empire in any possible wars that might arise. And they began, for the first time, to recruit the firstborn children, the eldest of each family. And that makes many Christians and also Jews send their children out of Palestine to avoid taking them to the war. In the case of the grandmother, she surely came because of the great general strike of the 29th, where the colonization process had already begun, and we were at the gates of the Nakba, but the Nakba was already planned. This is very interesting because this also generates surely the same thing that happened in your family. A generational gap. The children of that do not have much of a relationship with Palestine. They do not pass on the language, for example. And it is always the third generation that recovers Palestinianity. What was that process like? What was it that set it off? And what are you up to today?
Look, just like you say, it happens to me also. Well, obviously, in my parents' house, they spoke an Arabic language. And being born in Chile, they kind of had to recover everything, because in Chile, things were a little different. It's just like you say, they kind of experienced Palestine in the house. Something that was different for us. I think I get emotional because of the topic, sorry, but I think I have returned to it. I come from a school with a lot of social sense, a lot of politics. I don't think I had ever questioned it, like where it comes from. But yes, I think it was my dad who instilled it into me. Regardless of the fact that I seldom spoke, there was always these Palestinian things in my house. Always, always. Everything had to do with it. Food, traditions. And I think this provoked my sense of curiosity to investigate what this Palestinian thing they were talking about is. So I started to investigate, to learn from history. When people spoke to me, I like to have information and tell them what this is, what is happening, because they asked me at school. Deep down, there was an important Palestinian group that would talk about the issue of Palestine, and sometimes I felt like I had to participate in such arguments. The Palestinian issue always resonated in my head. It's good, it catches my attention, because I'm the most Palestinian-like person in my generation.
In fact, you are the first to travel to Palestine.
Exactly. In 2017, I said that I really have to go. I have to see what happens. And in addition to being the most beautiful trip of my life, at the same time, it is also a very powerful trip. Encountering this reality of injustice and encountering this reality of their everyday lives are really heartbreaking. And it is sad because they are very good people, a good nation, but in the end, they are having a hard time on a daily basis. And they are used to it. They have normalized this. I have friends who have instilled resistance into their lives. They don't have the possibility of being seen. I have a group of friends who are actually marathoners called Right to Movement. And they were in Chile here recently. And the truth is that I kind of see in them a hope of getting out of this. But in the end, there is no great help for them to achieve this hope.
There's a question that I always ask here because not many people understand it. When I took my first trip, I had a very special feeling, and I want to know if you felt the same thing and how you experienced it, because here you were actually returning to a place where you have never been to.
Yes, it's very strange.
Three different facets of the Zionist project. First, some Israeli citizens are enjoying watching the genocide from a hill in the occupied territories and cheering their army doing what the Nazis did with them. It is as if it were a film made in Hollywood. Second, we see an Israeli project, a real estate project to be located in the Gaza Strip, a coastal area oriented towards the north and with tourist potential, highly desired by Western imperialists. Third, we see images of the Nakba and all the destruction and this whole plan known as the Plan Dalit to expel about 700,000 Palestinians, destroying 500 villages and the life, history and geography of those who had lived in this territory for centuries. Well, let's see the story on the maps to see the evolution of this, to see if indeed, as Finkelstein said, what happened on October 7th justifies what came afterwards. Does what has happened in the last 75 years justify the complete dismantling of a fascist and neo-colonial regime like that of Israel? This is Palestine at the beginning of the 20th century, where Jews, Christians, Muslims, and atheists lived together without any problem and in absolute peace and brotherhood, with a proportion of the Jewish population close to 5%. Shortly after, in the first Zionist Congress in Basel, Switzerland in 1897, Theodor Herzl, recognized as the father of contemporary Zionism, presented his project called the Jewish State to form a Jewish national home in Palestine. Of course, the lobby carried out throughout the West, and with the main powers of the time allowing them to achieve in 1917 the Balfour Declaration, known as the formal beginning of the Palestinian tragedy. Great Britain, the current England, without having any right to do so, committed themselves to the Zionist organization and to give Palestine a group of foreigners coming from all over the world. This declaration was put into practice by an illegal immigrant that sought to change things on the ground and change the proportion of the population. In 1947, the population of Jewish religion was about 30%, but above religion, the Zionist population came in, but not only as refugees seeking support, but to start the programs of Tsarist Russia and also the Nazi Holocaust. They came to usurp everything. They made the newly born United Nations, which had been created from the failure of the Society of Nations, approved the partitions of Palestine, an organization that was established to protect the right of self-determination of the people, approved the partition of Palestine. And guess who were not invited to the meeting? The Palestinians. That is, in complete absence of the main owners of the land, they gave 55% of historical Palestine to the Zionist organization and 44% divided into three unconnected zones to the Palestinians. Clearly, there was no possibility that either of these two states would be consolidated as they were intended. Obviously, the Palestinians rejected, but Zionism also rejected it and advanced in the war of 1948 until it occupied 78% of historical Palestine in 1980. What we know today as occupied territory remained in the hands of Jordan and Egypt, but this lasted about 20 years until the war of 1967, where Israel made use of its great military power and its always strong support from the Western powers, and mainly from the United States, from Europe and Germany, tried to pay the blame for the Nazi Holocaust with Palestinian blood. They advanced on the entire territories and on the heights of the Syrian Golan and a strip of Lebanese territories that remained occupied for more than two decades. Today, after years of extermination, after years of a genocidal policy on the parts of Israel with the Oslo Agreement, the Palestinian territories are reduced to a 15% and also in the form of small bastustans without connections to each other. In such a way, they not only intend to drown the Palestinian population, but also the Palestinian economy. Now they continue encouraging or forcing in every possible way the Palestinian population to leave the place. But we Palestinians have resisted stubbornly. We have stayed on the lands to which we belong, and we have no intention of abandoning this land to make way for the continuity of the neocolonial Zionist project. And that is why we today face an ongoing genocide in Gaza, because the leaders of the Zionist project have understood that the foreigners can never defeat those who have remained in this land forever. I offer you the floor. We have time for two questions, please.
Tiempo para dos preguntas, por favor.
Un saludo. Mi nombre es Jorge Avedrapo, profesor. Greetings, my name is Jorge Avedrapo. Here is my question. It is true that the Zionists considered several options, territorial options, to carry out their projects among some Latin American countries. I mean, finally, what could happen in the future at a global level if the advance of Israel's colonial project is not stopped?
Efectivamente, Jorge, entre el primero y el cuarto Congreso Sionista.
Indeed, Jorge, between the first and the fourth Zionist Congresses, most of them held in Basel, Switzerland, several alternatives were put into discussion, including Uganda and Chilean Argentine Patagonia. The underlying theme was that there was no excuse that could be used to expel the inhabitants of these territories, and therefore they resorted to the myths of the biblical promise and the chosen people to sustain a colonial project like Zionism. And that is why Palestine ended up being chosen. Furthermore, if one looks at this as a projection not only of a Palestinian issue, because the problem is not only here. This is a problem of the global North-South confrontation, and therefore what happens in Palestine will have an intimate relationship with what happens in the Western Sahara, with what happens in other parts of the world, in Gualmapo, in our country, where the hegemonic classes, world imperialism and transnational imperialism must do everything possible to protect the interests they harvest through occupying every inch of this territory and controlling every inch of the market and effectively appropriating any common property or natural resources. This strategy exists in the world. Therefore, from my humble perspective, the only possibility of reaching a just solution in Palestine is the overcoming of capitalism on a global scale.
Es la superación del capitalismo a escala global.
Hola, mi nombre es Carlota.
I am Carolina Espina. I am president of the Luis Emilio Recovera Collection and Resource Center in Zeiler. My question is, why is the word apartheid used to refer to the Israeli policy against Palestine?
El apartheid es un concepto que se utiliza.
Apartheid is a concept that is used to refer to states or societies where there are two different systems inside them. For example, in South African apartheid, where within the same country, South Africa, there was a system for whites and a system for people of African descent. This system is seen today in Palestine and also in Israel, because not only within Israel there are first and second category citizens and different systems for those who are historically Palestinian and for Israeli citizens, but things are also tough for those who have recently arrived there and have just adopted Israeli citizenship. That's because they are Zionists and have many more rights than the Palestinians who have lived in Israel since before their birth. In addition, what we are seeing today in Gaza and the West Bank is a situation where the Israelis and the occupation, the illegal occupying power, the illegal Israeli settlers have all the rights, but the Palestinians have none. That is why the word apartheid was coined, and that is why it has been expanding the possibility of everyone recognizing the Israeli occupation as an apartheid system. We must never forget that in 1974, the United Nations General Assembly decreed that Zionism was a form of racism, homologously comparable to South African apartheid. This is while, due to the changes in the correlation of forces and North American and European pressure, this resolution was annulled several decades later. But this has not annulled the spirit and essence of Zionism, that in all these years, nothing has changed.
We'll be right back. Lo he mencionado en otros programas.
I have mentioned it in other programs, and I reiterate it today with more force than ever. Palestine, in its 5,000 years of history, has lived only 120 years of peace. The Palestinian people consisted of an ethnic strain absolutely intercultural, composed of Jews, Christians, Muslims, atheists, belonging to diverse peoples who have settled in Palestine at some point in history. They have been there since before the first invaders arrived, and they will surely be there after the last ones leave. Today, thousands of supposed Israeli citizens have abandoned Israel because they no longer feel safe among the Palestinians. The Palestinian nation sink their legs and roots into the ground of their homeland, where they are born, grow, and die. That's because Palestine is their land. I invite you to watch this program next week to learn more about the concept of genocide in Gaza. Don't miss the next episode of A Window to Palestine.
En el próximo capítulo de Ventana a Palestina.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we will be with you with the explanation of Dua ul-Kumail, the commentary of different parts of this Kumail supplication by the commander of the faithful Imam Ali alayhi salam. We'll be back after you listen to the parts we're going to discuss. ومن علي بحسن إجابتك وأقلني عثرتي. Dear listeners, we have reached this excerpt of the Divine Kumail Supplication. وَجْعَلْ لِسَانِي بِذِكْرِكَ لَهِجَ Make my tongue remember you constantly. وَقَلْبِي بِحُبِّكَ مُتَيَّمَ And my heart enthralled by your love. وَمُنَّ عَلَيَّ بِحُسْنِ إِجَابَتِكَ Be gracious to me by answering me favorably. وَأَقِلْنِي عَثْرَتِي وَغْفِرْ زَلَّتِي Nullify my slips, forgive my lapses. فَإِنَّكَ قَضَيْتَ عَلَىٰ عِبَادِكَ بِعِبَادَتِكَ Because you have decreed your worship for your servants. وأمرتهم بدعائك. You commanded them to supplicate. وضمنت لهم الإجابة. You assured them that they would be answered. فإليك يا ربي نصبت وجهي. So towards you, my Lord, I have turned my face. وإليك يا ربي مددت يدي. Towards you, my Lord, I have extended my hand. فبعزتك استجب لي دعائي. So by your might, comply with my supplication. Make me attain my desires. وبلغني مناي. Regarding the beginning phrase of this part, واجعل لساني بذكرك لهجة, we discussed in the previous episode. Now, let us talk about another aspect. Performing prayers is remembering Allah as well. This is a kind of practical remembrance. When we ask the Almighty Allah to make our tongue remember Him constantly, this can be in both ways. It can also have practical aspects as well, because we can perform prayers. And reciting Qur'an is remembering Allah as well. Sometimes we forget the special times, the special chances the Almighty Allah has set before us. Specific supplications recommended by Imams, or those transmitted supplications for certain times and places, are remembering Allah as well. Speaking in accord with the methods cited in the Holy Qur'an is another instance of remembering Allah. But the point is, above all, using the tongue for guiding people to Allah is the greatest and most valuable form of remembrance of the Almighty Allah.
Mercy, protect me and cause my tongue to accentuate your remembrance, and my heart filled with your love, and be gracious to me by your gracious response, and cause my evils to appear fewer, and forgive me my errors.
Thank you, Allah, that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
Thiqatul Islam Kulayni, in the final section of his valuable book, has narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that a pious man defeated Satan's temptations after a lot of worship. Because this constant remembrance of the Almighty Allah is a form, the best form of it is worshipping Him. Now, Satan called his army and told them, which of you can get this pious man out of the worshipper's circle? Everyone of these Satans mentioned their tricks, but none was accepted. One of them said, I will deceive him by prayers. Satan liked this idea of deceit and appointed him as the agent for misguiding this mentioned pious man. Now, Satan's agent went to the pious man's temple and began worshipping very eagerly. He was much engaged in enthusiastic worship that the pious man could not ask him the reason for his rare wild worship. When he finally asked the reason from the agent, he answered, I have committed a sin and now I am regretful. My regretfulness has set me into eager worshipping without getting tired. The pious man wanted to experience the same state of worshipping after regret from a sin, and he did not even think of the consequences if he would die while committing the sin. So he asked Satan's agent to help him. The agent recommended for him to do adultery with a famous prostitute woman. The pious man rushed to her, and the woman was astonished at seeing this pious man and with his divine countenance in that quarter of the city. The woman thought he has been deceived, so she told him, "One can never reach the position of nearness by wrongdoing." This state was so astonishing that the woman understood what state the man was in. The woman continued, "The one who has encouraged you to do so has intended to deceive and misguide you. Committing sins brings humans down and does not promote them. Now turn back to your temple, and if you do not find your encourager, know for sure that he has been Satan." The man, the pious man, Auchend, returned to the temple but did not see that evil agent anymore. He was very grateful to the woman who had saved him from engaging in wrongdoing. On the other hand, the woman passed away on that very night, and the Almighty addressed the prophet of that age, "Accompany other people in burying her body. I forgave all her sins because she guided one of my servants." Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you throughout my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Amir Abdullahian stresses once again that Iran will